Coming up on this episode of the CreeperCast, it's election week. So to break you out of your post-election night haze, we have two films that will clear your eyes and make use of those idle hands. First, it's the 1981 Oliver Stone thriller, The Hand. Then Jessica Alba stars in the 2008 American remake of Jin Guai, or The Eye. Mike reviews Clive Barker's The Body Politics, while I continue to try figuring out what the hell is going on with Fringe. All of that, plus Jeff's news. So turn off that pundit and take down those yard signs. It's time for CreeperCast, episode 99.
Hey, this is Justin Beam, author of Halloween, the complete authorized history, also with Trankus Films and HalloweenMovies.com, and you are listening to the CreeperCast.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the CreeperCast. I'm Jason, and with me are the two running mates for the Donner Party. It's Mike and Jeff.
And we're going to win.
Getting smaller every day.
Only because I get hungry.
All right. Well, this is episode 99. One more week. And Jeff, can you tell people what we've been trying to get them to do for our 100th episode?
For our 100th episode, yes. We would actually like you to call us at our voice feedback hotline, which Jason's going to tell you the number after I get done. Or email us at feedback@creepercast.com. You can even you know, go to our facebook.com/creepercast and let us know what you love, hate, despise, think is the greatest thing imaginable for the CreeperCast to be doing so that we can talk about it on the air. That's right. We're going to talk about you instead of talking about ourselves, because if you don't contact us, we're going to talk about ourselves. And we think we're awesome. Just so you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. And to get a hold of us, give us a call at 503-454-6941. That's 503-454-6941 to leave a message about what you think of the CreeperCast for our 100th episode. Otherwise, it's just us talking about ourselves. And even we don't like that.
It gets kind of boring.
Speak for yourself.
Well, that's because, Mike, you're the only one that you like.
This is very true. It's very true.
Yes, if Mike made a movie, it wouldn't suck.
Exactly.
Mike, just in general. He's like, everybody else sucks but me. So, and I want to let you know, we still have the iTunes giveaway going on. And I want to say to a new guy that just posted on our Facebook or our iTunes page, he said, this comes from Scott. And he says, if you're into horror genre, films, TV shows, I definitely recommend this podcast. It has excellent production values. Thank you, Scott. And indication that these guys care about putting out quality product. Okay, I'm going to say generally we do. And unfortunately right now, because I have no studio, our quality has dropped a little until I get into a new place and actually get my studio back. He said, if I could offer some constructive criticism, it would be to diversify the movies they review more, reviewing new, obscure, or independent films and focusing less on themes and old movies.
Don't we do that? Anyway.
That said, the show is enjoyable. Listen, primarily due to the geniusness of the hosts and the passion they exhibit for the subject matter. Scott, I want to thank you for that, and
we're going to talk more about our geniusness if you don't contact us and tell us what you like or hate.
Yeah, exactly, and that'll be next week. So I think with that, don't forget, go to our iTunes page. Just search CreeperCast on iTunes, or go to creepercast.com/iTunes, and you know, give us some feedback there, and when we hit 25, you'll be put into the proverbial hat for a chance to win your choice of one thing out of the CreeperCast swag store on our expense. We're paying for this. Come on, guys.
That's how stupid we are. I mean, how awesome we are.
Yes. All right, and I think with that, it's time to go to our first movie. And that would be 1981's The Hand. And let's give it the plot. A comic book artist loses his hand in a car accident. The hand is not found.
The stupidest way to lose a hand I have ever seen. And in any movie, I'm like, really?
Go around. Sorry, go back. Slow down. Whatever he says.
Sorry, go ahead.
The hand was not found at the scene of the accident, but it soon returns by itself to follow him around and murder those who anger him.
Or does it?
You think I've done something wrong, don't you?
Terror he could not forget.
You think there's something in there, don't you?
Torment he could not bear.
You want to see?
Truth he would not face.
Hey! Take a look!
Orion Pictures presents Michael Caine in The Hand.
You don't want me to go to New York with you, do you?
I'm not talking about a separation or anything permanent or anything like that. I thought you understood that. I thought that was why you said
well,
that I could...
We obviously do not understand each other. Look out!
Ah!
Get back!
How does it feel?
Life is still there. My fingers. I've been moving.
You'll have phantom feelings for years. Heat, irritation, pain. Your memory is still feeding familiar sensations of having a hand along your nerve endings.
What have you been doing during these blackouts? Misplacing things.
I'd be scared if I were you.
Did you see my signet ring?
No. Are you all right?
Oh, yes.
You never know what you can do. The unconscious is capable of anything. You could do anything you ever dreamed of and never had the guts to do.
I like the way you look at me.
Blackouts are nothing to fool with. You could kill somebody.
Ah!
It's all up there, and you'll never know.
Know what?
Who you are.
Don't be afraid of the pain.
Hey!
Tell me what you're feeling.
You're trying to kill me, aren't you?
Sense it, feel it, touch it.
You want to destroy me?
What is your image?
A man trapped in a nightmare. Locked in the grasp of
the hand.
Oh, John. John? John?
What's the matter? Why are you looking at me like that?
There's no hand.
Michael Caine in The Hand.
That's right. He said repeatedly, Michael Caine.
Really? Was Michael Caine in that movie?
Yeah, it's written and directed by Oliver Stone and stars Michael Caine, who is in... It's Michael Caine. Do I have to name what he's been in?
Yeah, no, you don't. And actually, you can bring up the little trivia here, which Oliver Stone's first choice was actually John Voight, and Voight turned it down.
Good.
Stone also approached Dustin Hoffman and Christopher Walken, both of which turned it down. Michael Caine, however, after the success of Dressed to Kill, was interested in making another horror film and needed a down payment to build a new garage.
I like that.
Did that make money? Did this movie make enough money for a down payment on a woodshed?
You know, the thing is any Oliver Stone movie pretty much makes money.
Yeah, see, and I didn't even know it was an Oliver Stone movie, but I did read when I was looking it up. What wasn't Stone the bum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's one of them directors that likes to make cameos.
Yeah, when I was sitting there watching it with a fan of the show Loves Dragons, and with that whole section with the bum came up, I was like, hey, there's the director.
It also stars Andrea Markovici. I always butcher her name.
Sure.
Who was in 1973's Cry Rape, 1976's The Front with Woody Allen, and a movie we reviewed a few weeks ago, 1985's The Stuff.
It'd be Markovici.
Markovici, yes. I think I butchered her name last time, too.
I guess you did. I
thought she looked familiar.
We also have Anne McEnroe, who was in 1986's True Stories, 1987's Wall Street, and 1988's Beetlejuice.
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 Beetlejuice. Oh, I was going to say, who's going to go for the third one?
I did. Beetlejuice.
Oh, okay.
You said it, Mike said it, I said it.
Okay.
Well, I said it, then you said it, then Mike said it, then I said it. What happens if you say it four times?
No wonder he hasn't shown up yet.
We blew it.
He's all confused.
Not only that, he doesn't know where to show up.
That's true.
All right. Some of the notes. I put down interesting thriller simply because I have a hard time calling this a straight horror film.
Yeah, I feel the same way, mostly because it was almost like the hand was a secondary device.
Yeah.
You know, it was more about his spiral into madness. And even up until the end, I kept going, you know, because if it was actually a disembodied hand, you know, that had come back to life somehow, you know, and was doing the killing, there's your element. There's your horror element, you know. Right. Whereas if it was all in his head, which when you get towards the end, that's where it goes. It goes, you know, okay, you know, this was all in his head. He actually did it during his blackouts, whatever. But then the very last scene, it threw me, you know, it whipped me around again. I'm like, is there actually a hand?
And that's Oliver Stone. That's Oliver Stone for you there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really a and you also have to look at it from the I think this film is really a great commentary about the way psychology was being viewed during the late 70s, early 80s. And that being the case, the question it is asking you is this all in his head? Does he have some type of a psychic connection with a lost body part, or is there really a hand out killing people?
Well, in the idle hand lore actually goes back a long ways. I mean, there's stories written long before film and television came along of people claiming that, you know, dismembered body parts, people from the Civil War claiming that dismembered body parts are the ones, you know, doing things.
Yes, and that is one of the interesting things about this film and the Eye when we get to it, is that a great portion of the movie is talking about what it's like to live without it.
Right.
Or to live with a different form of it. And I would agree that this is more a thriller, but at the same time, I'm one of those who wants to think that the hand was, you know, he has some type of a psychic connection with his hand, and his hand does stuff that he gets mad about.
Yeah, see, I'm in agreement more or less with Mike on that, is that whether or not it's his hand or not, it doesn't matter, because the hand to me was always secondary to the storyline, which is of Michael Caine's character basically going into a downward spiral. And you see that right from the beginning, where with him and his, I guess, wife. I mean, they were the most estranged.
Yeah.
Well, and that weirdest, was, you relationship. Know.
Weirdest relationship,
actually,
yeah.
That's actually where I wanted to come out, though, and say is that we kind of watch this film, and they're almost trying to convince us, and they do it through the daughter. I mean, Oliver Stone pulls it off through the daughter. But you get this concept that he wants us to feel like he is in the wrong. You know, that Michael Caine's character, you know, John Landis or John whatever, is in the wrong, okay, by being, you know, by going on this downward spiral. But correct me if I'm wrong. If it wasn't for his wife being such, you know, for trying to be so...
A horrible human being.
Yeah, if it wasn't for his wife being a horrible human being, this wouldn't have happened.
Well, the thing is they both are. Right from the beginning, the way that they talk, the way that they act to each other, it makes you wonder how they got together in the first place.
Well, I know this was the... what do we say? It was 1985 this came out?
81.
81, all right. So we're in that time where, you know, women are coming... The women's lib movement is in full force, and you know,
and yeah, Hippies United and all that was going on too.
But what threw me was her line, you know, when he said, basically when it came out that he wasn't going to work with the ghostwriter or whatever, you know, the new protege or whatever. And she's like, "What are we going to do for money?" And I'm like, yeah. get a job, woman.
Well, that's the thing. If you look at the beginning of the film, the way the beginning is, you know, starts is that, well, I'm not saying we need to break up, but let's do our own, you know, separate things for a while. I want to do my own thing. And then he loses his hand, so she feels trapped again.
Right.
Because she has to be his, you know, be there for him. And but at the same time, the whole time I'm thinking, you know, why don't you just continue up and going if that's what you wanted? But instead, she finds some other way to swing it to where she still gets to, you know, up and go. And then she gets mad at him because she wants the money to live off of, and he is not willing to sacrifice his art.
Right. Well, and even right down to the car drive right before he loses his hand, you know, they have that conversation where, you know, she's trying to explain to him very poorly, should I add. And him, he's not helping the situation because he's like literally leaning against the side of the door, you know, with his hand up, the one that he loses, up on his temple, you know, with a very condescending stare, basically, you know, giving her what he sees as rational comebacks. But really, they're just, you know, condescending bickering.
But at the same time, what she wanted to do was basically go spend his money.
Right.
Yeah. She wanted, you know, to go live in New York with her daughter. You know, she wanted all the benefits that his art, you know, his hard work provided, but didn't want
to be with
him, to be tied down to him.
Yeah.
You know, so I have no sympathy for this woman.
Why in my notes do I have the word do it, do it, do it?
Because that's when he was doing the
awful sex scene. That's yeah. Right.
That was the most awkward sex scene. History of cinema.
That's
and I've
right.
seen some really bad porn.
That's right. I just obviously when I watch this, as I'm looking at it in my notes, I'm going, do it, do it, do it. That's right. The girl, he's like, I'm watching that, and I swear she's just laying there. She's like, it's like, do it, do it,
yeah,
do it. And I'm like, is he not doing it? Is he yeah. doing it wrong?
You know, and of course, one of the other notes I wrote down was, I mean, she was just way forward. You know, she comes in the house and then boom, here's my tits. Yeah. Let's do this. And I'm like, okay, you know.
He's like, it's even funnier because she's like talking crap about the other, you know, about the other guy that we got to meet earlier and about how he's never going to get it. But you're not like him. So off goes the shirt.
Yeah, you're nothing like this other guy. So I'm just going to, you know, take my shirt off right here in your kitchen.
But I am going to run away with him for 2 weeks. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, going to my likes, Michael Caine actually had pretty solid acting. Although the thing with Michael Caine is that he's one of these, you know, English actors that even though he plays different roles, has a tendency to still have that same kind of English characteristic.
Yeah.
Oh, I absolutely.
That aristocratic kind of, you know, feel to him. So, but besides that, I mean, he did a great job. I loved his character. I thought he was great through most of the film. The directing, I love the directing of this film. There were some really, really horrible effects, some really yes, horrible gags.
The effects were something.
But again, you're talking 1981. So take that as it is. My dislikes, overall, I don't have anything that I can really point to as a specific dislike. I'm sure Mike will. But overall, as a film, I didn't feel it. Something about this film just kind of made me go, eh. But then again, I've always found that I've never been a big fan of Oliver Stone and the way that he writes and makes film.
That's not a very good explanation, by the way.
No.
That you just felt it was eh. Now, I'm not sure, Mike, I'm sure you'll correct me if you took the Oliver Stone film class with me, which I thought it was interesting I thought it was interesting that this film wasn't the one we began with in the film class, because I think it says a lot. I mean, of course, the one we began with was Platoon, but with this one is like, again, he's exploring, though, the ideas like what Jason mentioned at the beginning of the show, the ideas of, like, you know, war veterans who have lost their body parts and still feel like they're there. So he was still going for the whole war veteran thing. All in all, I don't think it was a horrible movie, and I think it had enough horror aspects. And I think in a lot of ways you can compare it to stuff that we talk about today, like The Walking Dead. If you're not listening to The Walking Dead Week in Review, you should. Plug moment. Did you notice how I did that?
Yes.
Nice, by the way. Much better than Jason's.
But like in The Walking Dead, it's a case of you're doing a character study for the most part. And you're looking at, I mean, we have a woman in this film that's a lot like, in my opinion, like Laurie in, you know, The Walking Dead. So we learn to hate her eventually and we want to see bad things happen to her. It's weird that, in this film, it's funny that it takes so long. One of the things that Oliver Stone, I think, is really good at is confusing us between, you know, is it real or isn't it? Because he plays with the psychology aspect to where Michael Caine's character begins to believe, if that's the way you want to take it, begins to believe he's the one who did the murders. But then at the end of the film, we find out maybe he wasn't.
Yeah, so, and I do like that aspect of it. Mike, what do you got for your likes and dislikes?
Well, I mean, overall, you guys have pretty much hit on the points. You know, I don't really – I guess I didn't feel like this was what I consider traditional horror. I liked the contrast between when he blacks out and we go to black and white. And it gives you that, you know, is the hand doing it? Is it him? And then, of course, at the end of the movie, we get, you know, the scenes where he's actually doing it. But then again, we flip-flop at the very last scene going, well, wait a minute, maybe it wasn't him doing it. I felt it was a little, it was just a little weird for me there. And there were a couple of scenes that just didn't work for me. Like what was the deal with the cat being catapulted through the window? What was, you know, and then he tosses over the table like he's angry about it. And then the next day he's out in the field desperately looking for his hand when it's been months. I'm like, why are you all of a sudden?
Yeah, that scene was one of those that I was just like, even if you found it, what are you going to do with it?
Well, yeah, you know, and the cat thing was right from the beginning, you know, when he was chopping wood and he cut off the tail of the lizard and the tail was still moving. And of course, that sets up the whole hand thing.
Right.
But and then you have the cat that eats the tail. And you're like, OK.
Sure. Well, the cat was eating the original lizard, too. But yeah.
Right. But then he comes over and eats the tail and it's like, sure. You know, as they're poking it with a stick.
And just, one of the other things I guess I didn't like was obviously they were not in a happy marriage. You know, she's trying to, you know, leave him, not leave him, whatever. And so he takes the route of, you know, going to California to make money, which, you know, is what she wants. She just wants the money and him far away. So when he has this affair with this, you know, student of his, then he acts all guilty about it. Like, I'm like, dude, you're doing
what she wanted.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What she pushed you to do.
Exactly. And then of course the problem I had is when he goes to get her or bring her and the daughter home, you know, it's like he senses that maybe there's something wrong in the house, but he only checks the living room where.
Well, that's the only place that you need to check.
Right. I mean, you know, God forbid that, you know, the body might be upstairs if there's a body, which why would he even suspect that? Because he blacked out.
Right. So overall, I'm going to give this three stabs for being a pretty good early 80s thriller, but nothing that'll really knock your socks off.
I got to go with you. 3 out of 5 is what I gave it. You know, not terrible, not great. Probably won't ever watch it again, but I don't feel like my life sucks any worse because of having watched it.
Well, that's good. That's a first.
I'll triple. Yeah, really. I'll triple that 3 out of 5. With a major difference that every time I watch this movie, I find myself laughing really hard most of the time. mostly because it's Michael Caine and it's a disembodied hand.
Do it.
And that scene just totally makes you want to lose it.
All right. And with that, let's head over to Captain Krieber's book corner. Mike, go ahead and do it.
All right. This week in Captain Krieger's book corner, thanks to Jeff. So disregard last week's podcast that we recorded 2 weeks ago where I said I was reviewing.
Can I really quickly give the background to why this was thrown in your lap?
The reason why it is because this episode is actually called The Body Politics. And I came upon that story based on a Clive Barker story from Books of Blood, from his Books of Blood short story collection. I can't remember what book it was. That's the only reason why I didn't send you a scanned version of it. And
if you let me do my review, you'll know which one it was.
Okay.
Let him finish.
But I just wanted to give the background before you started. Go ahead.
All right. So the title of this week's Captain Creeper's Book Corner is the novella The Body Politic by Clive Barker. I can't tell you how many pages it was because it was a web page that Jeff sent me, and I don't have the actual publication date. The basic plot of this is a man's hands get a life of their own, becoming sentient and deciding they can do better, separated from the oppression of the rest of the body. They kill Charlie's wife, and then frees Left and sends it on its own to start a revolution and free the rest of Handkind. See what I did there?
Yeah, that was nice.
Thank you. I swear that I had read this before or something very much like it because it seems so familiar, but yet not totally at the same time. I read this on a website, like I said, so it was a bit hard to read, but it was interesting enough to get me all the way through it. It took me a little bit of searching, but I discovered the story was originally published in Book 4 of the Books of Blood by Clive Barker, which was published in the United States as The Inhuman Condition. And once again, it is not available at my library. So the great thing about this story is it's terrifying because when you really think about it, it just might be possible. I mean, when it comes down to it, we don't really understand how the human body works most of the time. We don't have to think about every little action to get our bodies to move. Hell, as I typed this out, I don't understand how just by thinking or wanting it to happen, my fingers know exactly what to do. And think about how many neurological diseases are out there that affect your body or by unwanted or uncontrolled movements or the ones that impair movement. Are our bodies our own? How many times have we stubbed a toe or slammed a finger in a door? What if it wasn't just an act of clumsiness? What if our body parts are punishing us? And not all of that was from the story, but it sure as hell got me thinking about it. This is by no means Barker's scariest or weirdest or best written story, but so far it's the one that I'm going to remember the most. My score is 4 out of 5 stabs. It is available in paperback. I believe you can order it through Amazon. So that is Captain Creeper's Book Corner this week.
And really quickly, it also was, there was a story loosely based on it used in Quicksilver Highway that yes. I haven't been able to get a hold of the movie yet. I've been looking for it in all the used bins because I wanted to make you guys watch it, but.
Okay. All right, and I guess it's time to head over to This Week in Horror Television. And it's been a pretty busy week, and why not? It was Halloween. So if I actually went through every single show that dealt with horror and Halloween, I would be here for the rest of the podcast. But I'm not going to. I'm going to instead head on over to 666 Park Avenue, where we'll skip ahead a few episodes from the last time I talked about it to the party time at the Drake. And what better place to have a Halloween party than a building ran by Satan himself? I mean, come on.
Now, see, just to interject here.
Would you stop interjecting? Jesus, give my speech. I don't come in on you when you're talking.
No, but Jeff does, so you know, I figure it's fair. No, go ahead. I'll just save my comments till after you.
No, go ahead. Now that Jeff comes in on you, you come in on me. I must have to interject on Jeff so that we have a little Mexican standoff here.
There we go. Now, the more I watch this show, and I still dig this show, and of course I love Terry O'Quinn and Vanessa Williams and the rest of the cast, the more I watch the show, the less I believe he's actually the devil. I believe he may be a minion of the devil working, you know, but he is not nearly as, I guess, all powerful as I've come to believe.
See, the way that I see him is Al Pacino from The Devil's Advocate.
Huh.
That's how I see him. And that's what he reminds me of, is just like Al Pacino, how Al Pacino, you know, was, for all respect, mortal, you know, in many cases, and, you know, wasn't infallible. Neither is Gavin.
I guess I can buy that. I just the thing, part of what made me think of it that way is actually his, you know, the fact that he's married to
Olivia.
Whatever. Olivia, thank you.
Yeah.
And he genuinely has feelings for her. Obviously, when she's, what happens at the party, you know, which I'm sure you'll talk about. I guess to me, the devil, even in mortal form, wouldn't have that kind of connection to what amounts. I mean, she has not shown any sign of being anything supernatural. So, you know, basically, clearly, to me anyways, she, you know, if he is the devil, then he's in love with a mortal woman.
Yeah, and that makes me all the more interested in the episode because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is with Gavin being the devil, is I'm thinking that, you know, if you go through biblical, you know, the devil isn't actually all powerful. He's an angel.
And well, no, I'm not saying he's all powerful.
Being that he's not all powerful, he's not God, he can only control people to a point by their own actions and their own decisions and stuff like that. So that, to me, that means that, you know, he does have feelings. He is able to, he does think emotionally and logically. He's been around for, you know, eons, millions of years. But at the same time, he is not going to be, you know, this horned figure like we're used to. He's going to be more like Damien. And that's really, to me, when I say Satan himself, he really is. He's Damien. But he does remind me so much of Al Pacino from The Devil's Advocate that I think I keep saying, keep, you know, equating him to Satan.
All right. Well, all right. You know, I just want to throw that in there. But go ahead. Talk about your show.
Okay. And now back to 666 Park Avenue, still in progress. Henry was given his 15 minutes of fame after saving Commissioner Pike. But why have 15 minutes when you could have a lifetime? He acted like he didn't really want it, but hey, what better way to get ahead in politics than to be a local hero? Gavin is being stalked by a homicidal maniac. You only get two guesses why. Can't get it? Yeah, it doesn't matter. He gets an ominous text stating that he will pay for all he has done. Again, which one? Then Olivia is almost ran off the road and hit by a black SUV, but somehow manages to jump out of the way wearing high heel shoes and a cell phone pressed against her ear. Later that night, she is gassed and kidnapped by a masked man while Jane runs for her life from Peter Kramer, a la The Shining style, and is saved by the building's birds. Good thing she didn't evict them. Over on the CW, Supernatural's Sam and Dean are still looking for the missing Kevin. But in this episode, Dean decides to take a break from Sam to help his new bestie, Benny. The vamp he teamed up with in Purgatory to kill his maker. One plus of being in Purgatory is you come back with much better weapons and fighting abilities, because they pretty much took out the nest of vampires like they were stormtroopers. This episode was littered with flashbacks from both Winchester brothers. Sam remembers his year of peace as a hotel repairman, while Dean reminisces about the excitement of fighting for his life on the other side. Grimm may have given us its grimmest episode yet, as Nick learns more about his ancestors than he really wanted, i.e., they really are the monster's monster. This episode revolved around Nick and Hank searching for a missing girl. During the search, their leads get offed by a killer that brands them with a medieval G. Evidently, Nick is the nice Grimm, and some of the more psychotic ones don't like the way he's doing things. Eh, sort of. You gotta watch the episode. Things also heat up between Juliet and Renard, which I'm sure will lead to this season's true arc. And Fringe has done it again. Or actually, Fringe has done a really good job of confusing me this season by jumping ahead in time to when the observers have taken over the world. Honestly, I still don't know where that came from, and we're like 4 or 5 episodes in. I see a shark swimming underneath this entire season. Anyway, on Friday's episode titled Dark Knight Rises, Peter goes to some extremely dangerous and dark extremes. Yes, I did say extremely dangerous and dark extremes. That's great writing there, people. To avenge his daughter's death. You heard that right. His daughter's death. Remember, we're in the future now. He tortures and kills some of the observers and plays a mind game while trying to assemble a machine he pretty much could have done by himself. But it's the end. They really show the dark path that Peter is heading. Just as Olivia is trying to reach out to him emotionally, Peter decides that if he can't beat the observers, he might as well become one. An American Horror Story started back up with season 2. This time, they left the murder house and head into the asylum. Unfortunately, I haven't yet had a chance to watch any of the episodes, but many critics and fans are raving about this season being better than the last. When I get a chance to catch up, I will be sure to give you all my views. And that's what happened this week in horror television.
You forgot one thing.
What?
Oh, no.
Mockingbird Lane was on, man.
Yeah, I did watch that last week. I completely forgot about that because it was on Hulu Saturday morning last week. But it wasn't on this week. So,
see, and I have to derail everybody, though, and we have to give opinions.
Of Mockingbird Lane?
Yeah.
I loved it. Mockingbird Lane was it was hilarious. It was dark. It was a great show, and Eddie Izzard was fantastic.
Awesome. Yes. Well, and the reason it wasn't on, as far as I know, they've only filmed the pilot, and they released it on the 26th, you know, prior to Halloween, so people could watch it. And as far as I know, they're just kind of waiting. They were waiting to see what the ratings were to see if they're going to go ahead with it. And if you ask me, they definitely should.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great, great show. And I love the way that, you know, they do the whole take a lot of the stuff from the original, like Eddie Munster always in his Boy Scout uniform. and play that to how it is now and update it. And some of the way that they update and explain things is great. You know, right from getting the shipments of Grandpa.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, it was stuff like that that was just great. Or even Herman having his heart, like every time he gets stressed out, something from his heart breaks. And like you see little things flying everywhere.
Well, and I just love the zipper, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's I saw some people, like I was looking on the IMDb and some other sites talking about it. And people were like, you know, this isn't, you know, the Munsters and whatever. And it's like, this is an updated version. You know, it would look stupid to have, you know, the
1960s.
Yeah, you know, flat-headed Herman with the big boots and, you know, Eddie with the widow's peak, you know. I think what they've done with the show works much better.
Well, and it's darker. That's what I like about it. You know, you have Eddie Munster, who before you knew he was a werewolf. I mean, you just knew it, but you never actually like saw him, you know, wolf out or do anything like that. Same thing with Grandpa. Grandpa, you know, the most thing that you could see about him being a vampire was that he slept upside down.
Occasionally he would turn into a bat or something.
Yeah, okay.
But he had to take a pill for that.
But we got to see him feed in this one. So
right, like not just, you know, not just once, but you know,
a couple times.
You know, he attacks the mountain lion, and then, you know, at the end where, you know, it's like he's got a, you know, one of those crazy super straws as he's drinking out of the guy who gives Herman his new heart, you know. And becomes younger, you know, because the whole time I was watching, I'm like, why does he look like, he just looks like crap. I'm like, has Eddie aged that badly? Okay. And then I'm like, I'm sure some of it's makeup. And then, of course, when we get to the end and he's, you know, drinking the blood, which rejuvenates him, you know, we see what Eddie really looks like.
Right.
And it just some of the small things that I noticed, you know, during the show, like when they're in the hunting blind and the mountain lion attacks, whatever it was, the deer, I guess, and we see
the circle of life,
right? And we see Grandpa just kind of glide off to the side. You know, he doesn't actually turn and walk. He just kind of one of those, you know,
the side stops.
Side and just whoop, and he's gone. You know, just little things like that. You know, I've watched the episode like twice now, and I'm like, please bring this back, and I will watch the hell out of it.
Yes. All right, let's head into the news.
All right, this week in the news, I'm actually just going to look at a couple of movies, and then, of course, I have a horrible thing to talk about, which everybody's been talking about for a while now. But we will start with a real quick, James Bond is back, Skyfall comes out this week being the 9th. and then, of course, just in time for the end of, I know these aren't horror, it's just, it'll lead up to the horrible part of this. And I, just in time for the end, thank God, of this whole election thing, Lincoln will be out this weekend with Daniel Day-Lewis, directed by Steven Spielberg. I'm not too sure about this. I kind of, you know, I like Daniel Day, but I'm more of a Gangs of New York, There Will Be Blood type Daniel Day person.
And I'm more of a Gangnam Style.
Let's see. But and the movie everybody, on. Yeah. But the movie everybody is waiting for, yes, that's right, the horror edition of November, for November, is the last edition of the Twilight Saga.
Oh, dear God.
I'm happy in one sense.
Comes out November 6th.
Because it's over?
Yes.
That's right, the fake love story between Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson finally ends. This whole cheating affair thing that never really happened finally ends. it all finally ends. That's the most important thing, I think. That's the best thing about this movie coming out on November 16th. In the horrible news, well, actually, before we get to the horrible news, I just want to say in CreeperCast news, all CreeperCast hosts interrupt each other and argue about things. I just want to jump in there really quick and say, but that's what we do.
I know, in but fact, it's fun giving Mike fact, a hard time.
In fact, I am leaving this one open for some arguments, which I know aren't going to happen because we're all going to agree with each other. Because in the horrible news, thank you, Mike, for bringing this to my attention, because I would have rather have not known. But George Lucas sells out to Disney.
We have a moment of silence.
Which will lead us, of course, to a new trilogy that Disney is planning. Yes, that's right, a Star Wars trilogy that Disney is planning.
Now, the way that I read it is they're planning on going for more than a trilogy because they're like planning on like every couple of years for who knows how long.
Yeah, that was actually the last thing I read was it wasn't just a new trilogy. It was a new movie every two to three
years.
Why
wouldn't they? And why wouldn't they? It's Disney.
So does this mean we have to like wait every 5 years for like the Disney collection to come out?
The Disney Star Wars collection.
The Disney Star Wars collection.
And here's a horrible thought for you. And this was kind of percolating through my brain. New Star Wars Episode 7, starring Miley Cyrus.
As Princess that can't be Leia true. The second.
Well, just let that percolate in your head for a while. But...
You have to remember though, Disney is also coming out with a new Boy Meets World, where Cory and Topanga are back, and it's about their kids.
Who goes to the dark side? Wait, I'm sorry.
but I think the question that that poses most is to for me is what about the rest of Lucasfilm's catalog though? So we already saw some horrible things happen with Indiana Jones.
So are you saying they're going to own Howard the Duck?
Yes, they own Howard.
Oh, now that actually that you know I got to say I want to see more Howard the Duck. I got to be honest. And I really hope that Disney does take off on more Howard the Duck. My biggest concern is, and I always thought that Goonies would make a good, a good remake at, to a certain point, just bring it up to date. Obviously, you can't do any better than the 80s version, but I think it would be fun to see what Disney could do with that. But are we actually looking at Goonies sequels instead?
Does Lucas own that? Because I know it was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Lucasfilms owns a lot of stuff. So
I didn't know that they own Goonies.
Here's the other bad news. I don't know if you looked into this at all, but this other article that I read, because Disney owns They own the rights to everything but episode four, A New Hope. So we will no longer, unless, I believe it's Fox owns it. So unless they work out a deal, Disney and Fox work out a deal, we will never see another box set.
I'm not sure if that's horrible or not. Because there's enough box sets out.
But, you know, it's just something to think about. And honestly,
think about this, Jeff. Lucas himself came out with Jar Jar Binks.
Right.
So, obviously, he was losing his mind for a while.
It's just an interesting world that we live in, that now Disney owns Star Wars. They've already owned, a certain catalog of Marvel characters, even though they can't, do anything with them right now.
They own the Avengers.
Yeah.
Obviously, they don't put out terrible movies. I just don't know if I want to see my beloved Star Wars given the Disney treatment.
I don't know how beloved Star Wars is after 1, 2, and 3.
I said my trilogy, not the freaking prequels.
Anyway, that is the news.
All right. And with that, we go to 2008's The Eye. Simple plot. A blind woman receives an eye transplant that allows her to see into the supernatural world.
That allows her to see?
Yes. Into the supernatural world.
Good job.
Nervous about tomorrow?
Actually, I've never been so scared in my entire life.
The operation went flawlessly, but you're probably in for a shock.
Why?
There's a lot that you hadn't been introduced to visually yet.
Now take the bandages off. I'm going to help you open your eyes. Very slowly. Now tell me what you see.
You're really blurry. Do I know any of you?
Welcome home. Recognize my voice?
Oh. Are you okay?
You're recovering quite nicely.
Who's my donor?
These are your eyes now and they're working. Shouldn't matter where they came from.
Something's not right.
There's nothing wrong with your eyes.
I know you're scared. Don't be.
Who is she? It's you, Sydney. Oh my God.
This surgery was supposed to make me normal. I'm seeing things I shouldn't see.
All right, The Eye was written by Sebastian that guy, and was directed by David Gutierrez, and directed by David Moreau and Xavier Palud. It stars Jessica Alba, who was in 2005's Fantastic Four, 2005's Sin City, and 2010's Machete. It also has Alessandro Nivola, who was in 1997's Face Off, 2001's Jurassic Park 3, and will be in next year's Devil's Knot. And rounding things out, we have Parker Posey, who was in 2000's Scream 3, 2004's Blade Trinity, and 2006's Batman Returns. Evidently, she can't do an original of anything.
Right, that does seem that way.
So, my notes, Jessica Alba looks good.
Jessica Alba always looks good.
Okay, so the thing with this is a poorly fashioned remake of a Japanese ghost story. And the thing with Japanese ghost story movies,
wait a minute. I have to interrupt you here because this is a common misunderstanding. It is not a Japanese ghost story. It is a Chinese ghost story.
Really?
The reason why you know the difference is because Japanese ghost stories don't ever end well.
Oh. Okay.
That's one way you can tell, because I was fooled into believing, you know, I read this hype and they kept saying Japanese ghost story. And you even said it yourself that it was Chinese right when you gave the introduction.
Really?
But yeah, Chinese ghost stories usually give you hope. Japanese, there is no hope. That's just one thing to remember.
Good to know.
Okay. Anyway, but the thing is you have to look at the differences in horror personalities of the two countries. When you take horror films from over there and fashion them over here, they almost never work out well. And I mean, you can look at The Ring, The Grudge. I mean, all those are the only two that pop into my head right now. But I mean, there's been a lot of others. And they don't work well because we don't have the ghost demon background that they do over there.
No, the Asians have a very, very thick, deep ghost back, you know, spirit, demon, whatever you want to call it, background. So, and ours is nowhere near the way it is there for the Asians. Well, that's true.
to the point that, you know, the idea that if you don't bury a person correctly, they will come back to haunt you.
Right.
And be mad at you for not burying them correctly.
Interestingly enough, though, plot point by plot point, this is an exact replica.
See, I wouldn't know because I never actually saw the original.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't make anybody watch it because I figured, you know, one's good enough.
Right.
And it had Jessica in it.
Now, this is, you know, when I first saw this, though, I was honestly thinking, oh, my God, it's going to be a remake of Body Parts.
It was a remake of so many movies, man. I mean, you had Final Destination.
Yes.
Let's see. I picked out a whole bunch of them as I'm watching it. Oh, you've got, like, basically one of the main plot points in the Odd Thomas book series. You have Dead Like Me going on in there. I mean, there is so much happening in this movie.
The Sixth Sense.
Yes, there you go.
And I think, if I remember correctly, at one point they even make reference to it.
Yeah, they did. Because somebody made the joke, what, you talk to dead people?
Yes, yeah, that's it. And then there's that one point where, you know, she first takes her eyes off and says, why is everything so blurry? For some reason, I was expecting Morpheus's voice to come out and say, because you've never used them.
But in the film's defense, the first half of it was actually intended to be as a study of, you know, the psychology of somebody who hasn't seen since they were, like, what, 5 years old, they said?
Yeah.
She's probably in her, you know, she's probably 25. So, like, in 20 years, she hasn't been able to see. And she's got this new world to get into. And it's stuff that we've talked to you about in many films, is that people aren't going to believe the craziness that you think you're seeing in this case, because she hasn't seen in 20 years. She's looking at a whole new world. Everything's going to be alien to her.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Overall, as far as my likes, you know, there was some pretty solid acting. I did like the acting. They did a good job. The writing, as far as the lines go, wasn't bad. The idea of being able to see ghosts and stuff like that, it was contrived. I mean, it's been used over and over and over again, but it worked in the way that they did it. My biggest problem was the fact that they took too long of a build-up with this movie with no real payoff. I think the payoff of this movie was lackluster, when I'm watching this entire movie going, okay, if they're doing all this, there has to be some really big payoff. And then you get to the end and you're just like, it's like a balloon rising, and then all of a sudden go.
Well, yeah, I was watching it thinking that we were going to see some really seriously creepy crap happen, and then all of a sudden it turned into Final Destination.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again, like you, I was convinced that this was a Japanese film. So even when it got towards the ending, I was like, you know, when they got stopped in the traffic jam and everything, I'm like, oh, this is when the real shit's going to happen. Because in a Japanese film, it never ends well.
Well, yeah, but generally in American remakes of Japanese films, it does.
True. But this is, and then this is,
you know,
where you get,
and a great case in point is look at the end of Ringu, and look at the end of The Ring. Very similar films, you know, scene for scene all the way through, but then the American remake completely butchered it with the ending.
True. Well, this one actually, like I said before, is pretty much, you know, plot point by plot point follows it. The only thing they changed was the nationalities of people involved. It became Mexican instead of, you know, Chinese or whatever Oriental that they worked with in the original film. And so they used, I think the witch concept was actually, you know, American, which they were actually pulling from the Hispanic. Speaking of the Hispanic aspect, was I the, please tell me I wasn't the only one that when, you know, somebody was speaking Spanish and what's his name, the doctor, Paul, what's his name, would translate for her, Alessandro Nivola. He would like, you know, translate for her. And you're sitting there going, wait, she's Jessica Alba. She knows what they said.
Kind of. Mike, anyway. You've been pretty quiet.
Well, I honestly don't have much to say about this film. I didn't think it didn't totally suck, but there were things that I just didn't get. Because you guys talk about how she got eye transplant, and that's not what happened. She got new corneas.
Right.
So
they,
I did
kind of gloss over it. They just kind of gloss over that too, and it's hard to understand the difference between cornea and eye, and the film doesn't help you with that.
I was gonna say I must have like blinked at it when he said cornea, because through the whole film they were referring to it like her having brand new eyes from somebody else.
Right.
Right.
But there is a line that there's at least one line that specifically says all she got was new corneas.
Yeah. Well, they said it was a cornea transplant, and then suddenly it turned into her whole eye.
But here's my problem. Okay, so she gets new eyes or new corneas, so not even a whole eye, just part of eyes. And, okay, I get that maybe she can see ghosts now, but how the hell does that translate to now she can hear stuff too?
And, yeah, that was and the interacting, other you know, yeah.
Yeah, she was in their world too. But the one that really got me was when she was hearing everything and then having conversations, and you're like,
right,
wait a
that's
minute,
where I
what
was
the
like,
hell?
I'm like, how does getting new corneas translate to now I can hear these things too? You know, so that – and I'm sure it was, you know, the filmmaker's decision, you know, because if we just see it, it's not going to translate, or it's not going to give it any sort of creep factor. We have to be able to hear it as well, but we can't, you know,
when
say,
I do believe the cornea aspect of it was an American thing, because in the original Hong Kong version it was just an eye transplant.
Okay, well,
so
either way, you know, visual translates to auditory. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, there is that, yeah, there is that even I was just like, why can she hear them now?
Yeah.
I don't understand how the eyes somehow connected to the ears, and we're just not aware of that.
Well, the eye bone's connected to the ear bone, which is connected to the foot bone.
And this was just, you know me, I nitpick some of the smallest things, and in this case, it was small. When she looks in the mirror, you know, and she sees
somebody else,
the other girl, you know. I'm like, okay, so she's projecting or whatever, she sees what this other girl looks like. Everything else is the same. Why are her boobs smaller?
That's, you know, the funny thing about it is that I didn't pinpoint it. But when I saw them, you know, when I saw the same scene that you're talking about, I knew there was something different about the two guys.
I'm sorry.
But I didn't pinpoint it as well as you did.
That's because, you know, where we're watching a film, Mike is looking only for boobs. And God bless you for it.
I couldn't care less about acting or plot. I'm looking for boobs.
And that's why you think this movie sucked, because there was no boobs.
I think the best part of this is that Jessica Alba was nominated for a Razzie Award for Worst Actress.
Really? I didn't think she was that bad.
Yeah, honestly. I mean,
I mean, the film itself was, I'm going to give my stabs. I give it 2 stabs for being a less than stellar American adaptation of another Oriental ghost story that has a ending. That's my technical jargon.
And see, I would have given it, I'm going to give it a 3 because I'm not basing it on anything else. Again, you know, not great, but not terrible. I know I'll never watch this again. But on the same hand or on the same token, just like with The Hand, I didn't really see this as much of a horror movie just because, I mean, I just didn't feel creeped out. I didn't.
Well, you know, there were a few creepy parts. The thing that creeped me out the most.
I think it had the potential to be a horror film, and then they went somewhere else with it.
And that's why I say about the end, especially when, you know, one of the first demons or whatever, ghosts that she sees is a girl hit by a car, and she's, you know, the girl's taken away by, you know, what I can only assume is a Reaper.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
that's where I said Dead Like Me comes in.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for that to come back later on, and I'm like, and it didn't.
Or at least an explanation to that.
Yes,
I was waiting for Patrick Swayze to show up, you know, honestly.
And start making pottery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'm going to actually split the difference between you guys. And of course, my reasoning is a little different because I have seen the original. because it is plot point by plot point, pretty much the same film with, you know, Western differences, mostly because, like, with the cornea and the eye transplant difference, and the fact that they made it, you know, Hispanic instead of going with the Asian aspect, because if they'd have gone with the Asian, it would have been creepier, in my opinion. The only other thing that I want to mention is the locations in which it was shot, which I think, you know, gives it, you know, that extra half a point that I'm going with, because some of the hospital scenes were actually shot where they did General Hospital. That's pretty funny to me. And I have to give props to the place in which I live now. A lot of the exterior stuff, especially that took place in, you know, the Hispanic community, was shot right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All right. So you're giving it 2.5.
I'm going 2.5 because it doesn't do much better than that.
All right. And I think with that, let's get the music. All right. Well, that was the Body Politics episode. And I want to let you know that I'm not going to go in. I'm not talking politics. I'm not. I'm going to go to our contact to get a hold of us. Give us a call at 503-454-6941 or email us at feedback@creepercast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast and on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. Jeff, can you tell people about the iTunes sweepstakes?
Sure, I could tell people about the iTunes sweepstakes. In fact, we just talked to, or if you listen to remember the beginning of the show, we read a review from somebody who did exactly what we are asking you to do, which is to go to one of our iTunes pages, either the Creepercast iTunes page or the Walking Dead Week in Review iTunes page, and tell us what you think. As soon as we get 25 people who tell us what they think, we will draw a name out of a proverbial hat that is would be one of the 25 people, and I use the word proverbial because that's what Jason likes.
Or perverted.
Or perverted. Yeah, that's probably closer to the truth. And you get to choose one item out of our Creepercast store. That is one, we don't care what the price of it is, item out of the store. And, you know, it could be years after we pull it out of the perverted proverbial hat.
All right. What's coming up next week?
Next week, we are going to talk about ourselves, unless you contact us at any of the contact information that Jason has provided and tell us what you think about the Creepercast, what you'd like to hear more of, what you'd like to hear less of, you know, like Jason complaining all the time, kind of, you know, or about politics especially.
But, yeah.
Or Mike says he's, you know, things suck too much, or I just talk too much, whichever. Let us know what you love, hate, despise, think we should do more of. And we will talk about that on next week's program. Otherwise, we're just going to talk about how awesome we are, because we're going to figure if you don't tell us something that we're not doing good, we must be the most awesome podcast that ever existed. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Exactly. Mike, is there going to be a book next week?
Nope.
And I think with that, the music has ended, and so shall we. See you guys next week.
Night.
Night.